Every Woman is a feminist show about women and girls making a difference and the men who support us. As 50% of humanity and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, KKFI staff, volunteers, board, or management.
Hello, and welcome to Every Woman. You're here today with myself, Fiona Nowling, my wife, Una Nowling, behind the board, and with Sharon Lockhart, and I'm Pritchard, and we've got our guest in the studio, Hilary Shields. We're also going to be talking about the recent tax bill and about what's happened recently in Missouri with regards to education. Anne?
Oh, hi. Thank you, Fiona. So what do we think about this tax bill, historic legislation that was passed in the middle of the night? Is that how we're supposed to pass legislation?
Don't forget that it was written on the back of a napkin. So
that's right. Yeah. I loved all the little handwritten notes on the side. Those will be historic one day, I guess.
Well, I'm really disturbed by what they've been doing. It seems like this was the Donor Protection Act of 2017, I've heard it called. This is purely done because their wealthiest donors, who have poured millions of dollars into these races, demanded that their taxes be lowered. And if it had to be done at the expense of regular working families, then so be it. So I'm really disturbed by what I hear is in this bill. No one seems to be totally sure because, like I said, they wrote it on the back of a napkin and no one's really had a chance to actually read the thing yet.
Well, wait a minute. I thought we were all upset with when Nancy Pelosi supposedly said that they hadn't read the health care bill, which, by the way, I guess has been proven false. Anyway, I thought we weren't supposed to do bills that way.
I also thought we weren't supposed to add $1 trillion to the deficit, but apparently that doesn't matter either.
Oh, you can add $1 trillion to the deficit as long as it's for the military and also for corporate pockets rather than things like education or health and welfare.
Does anybody believe, let's get to the trickle-down thing, does anyone really believe that giving more money to corporations causes them to create more jobs and trickle their profits down to the average American?
It certainly didn't work that way in Kansas.
No, it didn't.
Didn't work that way with the Bush tax cuts. It hasn't ever worked that way, but they keep trying. And, you know, I respect that about the Republican Party. Just if at first you don't succeed, try again. And maybe one of these days that money will show up in our pockets.
But I think there are economists out there who would defy the logic of that ever working. I mean, I've heard those people.
Yes, there are lots of economists that say it's never going to work.
The economists at the University of Chicago, which is basically a very conservative economic school, have come out against the tax bill. Well, I was looking, I thought there's got to be something positive, you know, because what other than benefiting the people who bought their offices for them? Why would members of Congress vote for this? There had to be something. And so I guess I'm looking for their talking points, which were kind of hard to find because there's so much online against it.
I think you have to say they're generous donors. You
they're
can't
generous
say the people
donors.
That bought their offices for
okay.
them.
Okay. And the good things I can see right off the bat. It doubles the standard deduction.
Well, cutting deductions that regular families use, like the deduction for teachers to be able to spend their own money on their school supplies.
$250.
Get rid of a lot of those deductions. Getting rid of the state and local tax deductions that help people in higher tax
states.
Well, but
they're expanding the child tax credit, it says. They're expanding it to $2,000, up, so they're doubling it. It was $1,600 in the House bill, and the Senate bill doubles it from $1,000 to $2,000.
But I understand that it's cutting 13 million people off of the Affordable Care Act.
It's not cutting them off. They could still choose to stay on it. But because there's no mandate and no penalty, a lot of people will instantly drop off. And so everyone else's
rates
will have to pay more because there'll be less people on it.
And then the other thing is, well, we had the $1 trillion deficit, the loss of tax deductible interest for homeowners and for college students and graduates. That's a big slap to the face.
Yes.
Well, I mean, now to get to the teachers' tax deduction, here it says the Senate bill doubles it from $250 to $500.
Did they?
So they still have to reconcile the House and the Senate version, so that could be one thing that they keep in. And then you know they're going to keep in preserving that estate tax, or as they like to call it, the death tax.
Yep.
That, what is this? How much are the estates? You have to have $5.49 million estate.
And that's right now. That's what they're getting rid of. They want to raise that a lot higher. Right now, almost no one, I'm sure nobody in this room is ever going to be subject to the estate tax. Now, who would be subject to it are people like Donald Trump's children, Betsy DeVos's children, but God forbid they aren't able to get their full multi-billion-dollar estate when their parents pass.
It says, even in this article I'm looking at in CNN Money, even at today's levels, only 0.2% of all estates ever end up being subject to the estate tax.
Yep.
So 0.2%.
Because the people with tons and tons of money have sort of accountants that can advise them how to put things into trusts and shield it from big things like that.
You know, this brings up a point. I was in an Uber car recently, and the driver was talking to me about the death tax. And I explained to him, with his family, for a 40-acre farm in Midwest Kansas, that they were not going to be needing to worry about the death tax. But you see, the language, they speak language to people that confuses them.
Yes.
And that lack of education and I would use the word apolitical, the fact that people will say to you, well, I'm not political. What would you say to someone, Hillary, who said to you, well, I'm not political, I don't pay attention to that?
If you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
Thank you.
Oh, that's good. Is that an original quote?
No.
Oh.
That's kind of a union thing. I've heard that through the unions, too. That's true, though. I mean, how could you not understand, especially if this is going to affect your pocketbook? And it seems to me that everybody cares about money, right? That's something that could get us all going. Because here we've lost the individual mandate to buy health insurance, as Fiona mentioned, but also we're losing the ability to deduct our medical expenses. And for some elderly couples especially, those are quite significant.
Yep.
Well, and I think it's important to point out that there are some tax cuts for regular families to start, but those tax cuts phase out while the corporate tax cuts are permanent, because that tells you who they're prioritizing.
Exactly.
That they want their big donors, their wealthiest supporters, to have these tax cuts forever, and they'll give some little ones to regular folks right now to try and sweeten the deal without saying, oh, but in 10 years, those are all going away. Well, you know, our donors get to keep them forever.
Yeah, it's just, the CBO said that those people that are making over $1 million would receive a gain of $59,615 when the bill's tax cuts take effect in 2019.
Can I make a guess that the majority of, let's say, Missouri, okay? The majority of taxpayers in Missouri don't make $59,000. They would make less than that.
You mean get a savings of 59?
Gross. Yeah. They don't even gross $59,000.
No, I'm talking about an income.
Oh, don't even make it
income.
An income.
Do half of the taxpayers in Missouri have a yearly income of
$59,000? Well, let me find out.
I think that would be fairly easy. I'm going to make a sort of a half-educated guess, and that would be no.
That's kind of my guess.
Okay.
I'm kind of thinking $37,000.
I have a source here that says the median household income for Missouri, this is for 2011, was $45,231, according to the U.S. Census Bureau Small Area Estimates Branch.
So
it's not going to have gone up to $59,000 in the intervening 6 years.
No, let me go over this again. So people who make $1 million a year are going to get $59,000 in additional tax savings on this bill,
yeah,
which is more than the average family of four in Missouri lives on in a year.
It's something more than the, yeah, because it's medium household. It's not just medium individual.
Mm-hmm. So, it makes you wonder who's in charge here.
I could comment, but we might have to have the 7-second delay button. Take your hand away from that. I said I could comment, but I wasn't going to.
And I have this article up on my iPad that I was looking at for what's in the Senate bill. And over on the side, in other articles, it's crush your debt, refinance to 15 years. Brilliant tip for paying off your mortgage in half the time. And then 2017 mortgage rates as low as 2.88%. And now here a bank is announcing a savings account that's going to pay 1.3% in interest. When you put all of that together, that's our world as average people in this country. And it, I just think it's almost impossible for anybody to relate to the million-dollar income and the savings.
But if you live in Missouri, you could get a Missouri bond for one of the cities or something, and that would be state and government tax-free. Even if it was paying 1.3%, it would be tax-free, and that effectively gives you a boost up to maybe 1.5 or something, depending on what your tax rate is.
Wow.
Yeah. But usually it's only rich people that think of doing things like that and get access to being able to buy blocks of things like that. So, of course, they get more money. Those who have get more, and those who haven't get even that taken away.
And I would say the average person, when your marginal tax rate is probably closer to 15%, even if you're in a 25% rate, if the overall rate of tax you're paying
by the time you is, file all your expenses. Well, we shall see. I did read, it was really interesting just the other day, I read one of the Republican senators said, the senators who are voting for this understand that it's going to negatively affect their reelection chances.
That doesn't make sense, really.
Well, it means they know that the people who they supposedly represent were strongly opposed to this bill.
They've certainly been, from what I've seen online, they've been getting a fair number of phone calls and emails and faxes and every communication measure you can imagine.
So how long does it take to get vested in a retirement account in the Senate? Does anybody know?
First day?
I looked that up once. I think it's 5 years.
Really?
It's pretty standard.
Is that full boat? What percent? 80%
of
salary?
The talking point that they get full retirement after serving one term is completely false. They do have to serve some time first, just like in any other job.
Well, now, a Senate term is 6 years.
Right. Well, they get. So, I think they get a little bit of it after 6 years, but in order to be fully vested and receive the full benefit, they have to serve several terms.
Yeah, but then they can become a lobbyist. They
right,
can go
right.
On the,
they yes. have a lot of other opportunities.
Talking circuit, and go work for a think tank, whatever they want to do. There's a nice golden parachute. Don't worry, they're going to be okay.
Yes, yes.
It's a shame, really, because the golden parachute, if you actually had a real golden parachute, would send you plummeting straight away and be no use. It's such a pity it doesn't work like that.
That's just a regular parachute, Fiona. We're talking about the golden ones that I've never seen. I've never been in one on one.
I think she's talking about the gold weight, carat weight.
It would be like a lead balloon in reality.
Yeah, right, right.
So didn't you say that you found something that Claire McCaskill had said about the bill?
Yes, I've got a quote from her here. She said on Twitter, so this is a quote, "I'm mad and sad. We need to work together, compromise, and produce thoughtful results for frustrated families. Not a one party behind closed doors, no time to debate, no hearing, jam it through in the middle of the night mess." End quote.
Okay, and I have a quote from Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming, who's on the other side of the aisle from Claire, in the effort to be... to tell both sides of the story here. And he said, quote, "The American people wanted change. We were able to deliver," end quote.
It depends on who you're thinking of delivering for.
Well, change at what price also, I would wonder.
I know a lot of people in education are appalled at how it's going to affect postgraduate students because they can't deduct any of their
That was really appalling to me because it's like a fringe benefit that they don't have to pay tuition because they are working for the university by teaching.
Yes, so that's now counted as income and that's
it's money they never see.
Yeah.
It's like you being taxed on any scholarship. You know, if your kid goes to school on a scholarship, how would you like to see that scholarship considered income? That's basically
what this is. Don't give them ideas.
Oh, really? Okay. It's pretty scary. So, speaking of education, what about what happened on the Missouri State Board of Education this week?
So, how many members of the board has Eric Greitens appointed and removed and appointed at this point?
I believe 10 was what I read yesterday.
This is crazy. He just one after the other, if they wouldn't do what he wanted, just kicked him out, put someone new in, kicked him out, put someone new in, and finally he got his way and was able to fire the commissioner. And they're trying to push charter schools. They're trying to push for-profit schools. Again, look at who's giving him money. A bunch of charter school advocates who are going to see money in their pockets.
Betsy DeVos.
And it's going to hurt regular families. It's going to hurt our public school teachers. You said you're a retired teacher.
I'm just recently retired teacher, and I've taught for 37 years in Missouri. I knew Margie Vandeven. I worked with her on a probably about a year-long task force that helped write the guidelines by which the schools in the state of Missouri are judged for their accreditation. I was a teacher in the Kansas City School District at the time that I was appointed to this task force. And what really impressed me is that at the time, the school district had lost their accreditation. And this, what we were working on was the report card, basically, to determine whether schools would be accredited or not. And she was very interested in having teachers and community members from Kansas City on this task force because of the way we had been negatively impacted by the state accreditation formula or whatever they would have called it. They completely changed it. She really wanted our input. And that always really impressed me, you know, because we didn't get that same kind of warm reception from all education officials always in the state of Missouri. She was a very... she wanted to embrace everyone's opinion, and honestly, she never once gave a hint as to what her own personal opinion was about charter schools or vouchers, which impresses me, too, because she's not supposed to be political. Mm-hmm. She's supposed to just help supervise the public schools in the state of Missouri, and I felt like she did a very good job, and this was a big mistake by the governor.
I personally benefited from an equivalent to voucher system in the UK that... the Labour Party have since taken away, and I got to go to a private school which was basically the top school in the country, and they only paid them the same amount that they would have paid a state school, and so they didn't dip into the public tax fund anymore, but we got what my family's taxes had paid for, basically.
Did your parents then have to pay the what was left over from that amount?
Actually, until my last year at school, the school fees were as low or lower than would have gone to a state school. In my last year at school, we had to pay £3 a term to top it up to the rest of the school fees.
Yeah, it's... now, let me throw this one out there, because Sharon and I think, Fiona, you also live in Kansas.
Yes.
And let's go back... Hillary, I don't know if you remember, about 20 years ago, there was a state school board member in Kansas that embarrassed the state nationwide by talking about not teaching evolution in our schools. Her name was Connie Morris. She was from Western Kansas, and she was quite controversial. She had some support on the board. Well, what the rest of that story, and everybody still laughs about that, but the end of that story is that about a year later, in Kansas, we elect our state school board members. She did not win her reelection.
I remember.
And the board was completely reshaped with people who didn't share Ms. Morris's views. And since then, Kansas has actually been noticed and awarded for their outstanding science curriculum. They completely redid their science curriculum. It ended up being a good story. Nobody ever tells you that good end part. The reason I bring this up is I taught in Missouri, and I often wondered, well, why don't we ever hear about the Kansas Board? Because the Missouri Board of Education has been embroiled in controversy my entire teaching career. It's always one thing or another. So I'm wondering if maybe Missouri should elect their state school board members. The process now has the governor appoint them. And when you have a bully governor like we do now, who just, we said 10 people that he rotated through that board until he got the body that he wanted to support what he wanted to do.
I guess it would depend on how the districts were drawn up for who gets to vote
true,
for them, because they could gerrymander them out of all proportion and have things barely connected by a thread just to get people to still keep his proportion of
opinions. But I think that's one of the beautiful things about our public school system is that we do, at the local level, elect these board
yes.
members, and that they are accountable to their communities. And it sounds to me like the way the system is working right now, it's not working. That if the governor just can keep firing people until he gets the outcome that he wants, that that's not being responsive to the will of the people. That's being responsive to the will of one pretty out-of-touch guy who I don't think is looking out for our education system. I think, again, like we keep seeing over and over again, he's looking out for the people that paid for his election.
You know, there is a saying that we get the government we deserve. And one has to look back at the people who elected Greiter. Greitens. Where did I come up with that? Greitens. And wonder where they got their education.
But there were also lots of accusations against the previous governor and people.
Yeah, he did not.
He wasn't.
We weren't,
Snow White.
As a teacher, we weren't all completely supportive of his appointments. No, you're right.
And I think it's when people have been in power for a while or whatever, it's very easy to hear stories and rumors, and some of the rumors may actually be true and things against people, and dig up some dirt on it. And so people probably thought, well, at least the new guy can't be as bad and can't be as entrenched in whatever the other guy was up to. And then, of course, you find out that you've elected
well,
someone.
It goes back to this Republican quote. Did you read
yes,
that?
Yes, she
did.
They want to change.
They
were able
change.
To deliver.
Yep.
Done.
But you also can't separate this conversation from one about campaign finance.
Yeah.
No.
That
right.
He took money from a lot of dark money sources. We know that he's got these, you know, shady nonprofits and PACs. And until we address some of those issues, it's really hard to have a totally fair election because the scales are tilted towards people who are willing to do anything for the person that gives them the most money.
Well, I think you could say that the definition of an honest man is that once he's bought, he stays bought.
That's good.
I mean, otherwise someone would just go over to the next highest bidder.
Is that an original quote?
Is that a British thing?
What, that we always stay
once
bought?
Once he's bought, he stays bought. He stays with the party who bought him instead of the party who brought him.
Maybe their definition of an honest man.
Yeah, I mean, some people are bought by their ideals and whatever, and some people get bought for other things that they think, maybe they think once they got in power they could do things for good, but then they've made deals with people to get there and find themselves kind of hoisted on their own petard and over
a
very unpleasant barrel.
Debts to pay.
Yes.
Or when you say, you know, it makes you wonder if sometimes do these people get into predicaments where their very lives depend on it? I mean, that if you don't do what I say, we're going to send Guido to break your legs. I mean,
I think their political life depends on it.
Yes.
If you don't do
yeah.
what we say, the donations dry up. So that's what we heard at the federal level with these senators saying, if we don't do this, the donors have told us they're turning off the money. And here at the state level, if he doesn't pursue these policies, his big donors, his, you know, mega billionaires that are dumping money into his campaign, they may turn off the money.
So they assume that the people are so stupid. And so far it's working, I guess. That
again, I don't think that it's about people being stupid, because I just went through this. I just went through a campaign where I was outspent about 10 to 1. And it's not that people are stupid, but it's that if you can't get your message out to them, they don't have a chance to make an informed decision because they're only hearing one side, or they're hearing it
exactly.
really disproportionately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big problem. It means that real grassroots candidates who aren't reliant on big donors, we just don't get to be part of the conversation.
Right.
And that's the real problem.
And the FCC being taking away net neutrality is going to make things even worse there, mm-hmm. because if you have a grassroots campaign and lots of people are tweeting or putting things on Facebook and sharing information, things spread and filter out there anyway, mm-hmm. and people can organize and get together and find out who's worth supporting. But if you take the net neutrality away, they can block either within their sites, or they can block any websites that are, say, Democrat-leaning, but still put out the, like, Breitbart-type things and have fast, high-speed access to stuff like that.
And there are people here at this table who are old enough to remember the Fairness Doctrine. There was a time during a political campaign when you saw just as many commercials for one candidate as you did for their opponent. That was the law. And even in the news media, if they told a story about one guy, they had to tell a story the same length of time about the other guy. Things have really changed. That was during the Ronald Reagan administration, so I'm assuming sometime in the 80s.
So say someone got $100 million from donors and the other person got $10 million.
Well, you couldn't...
They could only spend $10 million on advertising
because
they couldn't...
You couldn't give people $100 million back then.
Okay, but for argument...
They were very strict about the amount of money they could raise. The money itself wasn't part of the Fairness Doctrine. The Fairness Doctrine governed media time.
Yeah.
So let's go to Hillary's race. During the Fairness Doctrine, if that was still in place, we would have seen just as many commercials promoting Hillary Shields' campaign as we did for her opponent.
Well, what we saw during Hillary's campaign, I only recall seeing one spot about SharePoint, but I saw buku spots attacking Hillary.
Yes, that's
which
right.
Made
that's
me
right.
very sure that Hillary was a really strong candidate,
yeah.
and they were really scared.
Right. It made us want to support
they
you more.
Were
trust
scared.
Me.
Yeah.
Well, and when you look at those ads, most of them were paid for by dark money PACs.
Right.
By
it wasn't your opponent paying for them. It was other people.
It was people who were good friends with him.
Right.
Put it that way, but. It's people, it's groups who don't have to disclose their donors, who don't have to say why they're really doing this, and who can take hundreds of thousands of dollars from a single person. And it
yes.
just means that regular folks, their voices get drowned out by these mega wealthy people who are willing to throw hundreds of thousands of dollars at a state level election. And that doesn't even touch on what happens at the federal level.
What was it? I read somewhere $1 million for a $30,000 a year job.
Yeah.
That's just incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know at my company and at previous companies that I've worked at, they all have a company PAC, and they all encourage the employees to donate to it so we can have one big voice and get mm-hmm. and argue for things the way that they want them to be. And they always say it as if it's a very high-minded, idealistic
like donating
thing.
To United Way.
Because,
like
when,
the same
I mean,
thing.
My previous company was HP, and they say that they want to lobby and make sure that the Congress understands the importance of technology and internet and access to technology and stuff. But once you've donated that money, you have no idea what they actually spend it on, who it goes
right.
to, and how they lobby.
Mm-hmm. And what frustrates me as a longtime public employee was laws prohibited me from being able to speak out like that as a collective group, the
yes.
employees I worked with.
Yes.
We could speak individually, but not at work. In fact, not long ago, a law was passed that basic, or maybe it was just filed, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say it was passed, that banned us being able to wear quote-unquote political shirts at work. So
that takes away your First Amendment right.
It does. Now, as a teacher, I'm going to say, you know, my dad was also a career educator, and he would never put any political bumper stickers on his car because he felt like it was wrong for us to take a side in front of our students.
I'm not talking about political statements, because everything's political.
I'm talking
political.
About support. Well, no, support for certain candidates and
yeah.
issues, things that directly related to what we vote for on Election Day.
Given how I tended to feel as a kid about most of my teachers, if most of them I just didn't care about one way or another, so their opinion wouldn't
bother
me.
Well, you didn't have me.
And some of them I actively hated. So if they were for someone, I might have been against them just on that principle. And then some of them I liked. So it could work either way. you advocating buy a bumper sticker or a t-shirt?
Well, the basic rule for all teachers, and then I'll let Hillary say what she wanted to say, is that it's not our job to teach children what to think, but how to think.
Yes, definitely.
And I think you want to keep an environment that's inclusive for all of these kids. And think about it, if it was someone whose politics you deeply disagreed with, you don't want them to make your kid feel uncomfortable to be in that class to say, but my mom's supporting the other guy. You want that to be an environment where all of these kids who are required to be there by law are comfortable
being definitely.
There.
Focus on the process. I think that's what our answer was at the school
teach
level.
Teach them civics.
Teach them civics and understand, you know, how these elections are happening and what you need to do, and that it is responsible as a citizen to participate in the elected process. Mm-hmm.
And when I was teaching in England, we had a dress code that wouldn't have allowed us to wear anything as scruffy as a t-shirt. So they kind of got around it that way by requiring, like, professional attire, where it's like blouses or shirts and ties and dress smartly, which means it's very hard to obtain anything that would have any large political text on it when you're dressing like that.
Well, I guess what frustrated me the most is that the policies that were shaped in Jefferson City directly affected not only my job, but the lives of my students. And I always felt like we needed to have a larger voice.
When I was teaching in the UK, it was stuff that came down from the center of the country, from London. Mm-hmm. And while I was teaching science, which included teaching sex education and reproduction, there was still a law in place that was against spreading homosexuality and promoting it in schools, and that was taken very strictly and was meant to make sure that you didn't say, and hey, you can have safe homosexual sex if you use a condom or if you use a mouth dental dam for oral sex or something like that. And you weren't allowed to say that because it might be considered as promoting the homosexual lifestyle.
Yes.
And it was illegal, but there were ways around it. Or since no one ever pretended to actually be in your classroom monitoring your sex education, you could still actually just say, screw it, I'm sharing this information because it's important and it can save people's lives.
I'm going to give the telephone number in case anybody out there is wanting to call in, 816-931-5534, if you want to join in this conversation, ask a question, make a comment. Our guest is Hillary Shields, and she just ran a very successful campaign, and I understand we'll be planning to run another one soon. And we also wanted to talk to her about Indivisible, KC, that telephone number again is 816-931-5534 if you want to call in.
I'm very interested in what attracted you to Indivisible and what led you to take on the leadership role that you had with that movement.
Sure. So after the 2016 election, I was really upset with the results. I saw people at the state level, at the federal level, who were elected, who were going to pursue policies that I thought were going to hurt regular families. And we saw them last night pass a bill that no one has read, that was written on the back of a napkin, that is going to hurt regular families, and all for the benefit of these huge donors. And I saw, so I was really upset about this. And I wanted to do something productive with all that upset and energy. And I was on Facebook, and I saw somebody had posted this Google Doc of the Indivisible Guide that basically laid out how to talk to your representatives. Uh-huh. It was just, like, here's how to visit their office. Here's how to call them. Here's how to go to a town hall to try to talk to the people who are supposed to represent you. Just like we said, it's so important to teach civics. This was teaching civics to regular people. Here's how you engage with the process. And I wanted to be a part of that. So I went out looking. I went on to Twitter and searched for Indivisible KC, and there wasn't one. So I made an Indivisible KC and said, hey, we're getting organized. And people started following it. So I was like, okay, we need to actually do something. I went on Facebook and found a group that was organizing and got together with them. And so we started making these visits. Our first one was way back in January before the inauguration.
Uh-huh, I remember.
And we went to a mobile office for Senator Blunt, who had his staff out in the community. So they were in, I went to the one in Blue Springs. They had several that day. And they were obviously used to having one or two people show up at these things. And we had about 30 people show up and ask them hard questions and talk to them about things like healthcare, about how if they repealed the Affordable Care Act, how it was going to really impact families in our community. And right there, just seeing kind of the shock that they had that people were actually paying attention,
yes,
that people were actually showing up, it made me think maybe we could really make a difference. So I threw myself into organizing that and led a lot of these visits, talking to the staff members, went on visits to Jefferson City to talk to them about charter schools, which they've been pushing expansion for years. It looks like they're going to push expansion of charter schools again next year, and we're going to have to keep saying no to that. And it was rewarding because we saw the kind of victories that we could have. We did prevent the repeal of the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
But we saw last night that it's not all victories. Getting people engaged and paying attention, if you still have these folks in office that are more interested in serving their big donors than serving their constituents, you're not going to be able to make a real change. And that was that kind of thing, and seeing what was going on in Jeff City and feeling like they weren't listening to us either, yeah, is what inspired me to run for office. And it's what is inspiring me to run again in 2018, because we need people in Jefferson City that are looking out for regular families, that care about what happened to the children in our community, that care about making sure that public education is available, a good quality public education for every kid in Missouri, and making sure that we invest in our infrastructure. You know, our roads and bridges are falling apart across the state, and folks in Jeff City have just been ignoring the problem, kicking the can down the road, and it's time for us to actually pay attention to this. It's time for us to actually look for real solutions, because you keep kicking that can, eventually it's going to fall into a giant pothole, and it's a real problem, and we need people who are interested in finding real solutions. So that's why I've decided to get involved, because I've seen working together, fighting against these bad policies is important, but getting good people into office is just as important.
And I don't know why this made me think of it, but it seems to me that unions used to have about 30% of the workforce membership, and now last statistics I read, it was down to about 7%. Mm-hmm. Is it possible for unions to re-up themselves so that people can have a decent wage? Do you see that happening?
So one of the things that we saw this last year was that our state legislature passed so-called right-to-work legislation, which I like to call right-to-work for less, where they're really trying to weaken unions across the state. And it had the effect of lighting a fire under organized labor like nothing has done in a generation. And I saw, as I was out there collecting signatures with them, I saw people getting involved like I'd never seen before. They collected over 300,000 signatures to repeal right to work. It's going to go on the ballot next year. And it has brought the labor community together. It has woken the sleeping giant. And I think that there's a real opportunity here to repeal right to work and to strengthen our unions and to try and bring more people into unions, because we know that there's a lot of people who are working hard, who are working full-time and are living in poverty in this state, and they need to have a voice on the job because they're working hard, they're making money, they are making other people rich, and they're living in poverty, and they need to have a fair share of what they're producing. So I hope to see more folks in these low-wage sectors, especially people, you know, who are working in things like home health care, who work incredibly hard and for incredibly low wages and really deserve to be treated better. You know, I hear a lot of times when people talk about low-wage workers, they talk about, well, people who are flipping burgers. And I think people, whether they're in fast food or any other industry, deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. But I also look at low-wage workers and I think about the home health aides, the care aides that came in and took care of my grandfather when he was on hospice care. And I want those people to be career people. Mm-hmm. I want this to be people who this is their life's work and their life's passion, who are well-trained and who care about what they're doing and earn a good wage doing it. And so I'd really like to see folks like that be able to earn a living wage, be able to take care of themselves. And I think that getting organized and joining the labor movement is really going to be a big part of that.
Well, we have a phone call from Janice in Independence now. So, Janice, can you go ahead?
Yes. I was wondering if you all could tell me how we're going to get more people to the polls to vote instead of just complaining about things.
So I think it's we have to get them good candidates, first of all. So when I ran the state Senate race, a Democrat hadn't run in this district since 2006. And there's not a whole lot of point in showing up for an election if there's only one name on the ballot. So I want to see people from both parties running in every district across the state, because I think it's really important to give people a reason to show up. And then I also think we have to organize. We have to get out there and make the argument and talk to people one-on-one about why it's so important that they get engaged, that they are a part of this process. It's like I said earlier, if you don't have a seat at the table, you're on the menu. We need to communicate to people that they really need to show up, and that it's incredibly important that their vote really does matter.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for your
call, Janice.
Well, and people are, you know, I have found, I've always been interested in politics at varying levels in terms of my own involvement. But one thing that I've found over the years is it's usually one issue. Like, one of the most politically active people I know right now is a woman who lives in Prairie Village and is working really hard to get rid of the breed-specific legislation that affects the kind of dog that you can own.
Oh, yeah.
Which, to people who aren't dog lovers, that wouldn't seem like much. But that one issue alone was what made her put her foot in. And mm-hmm. now she's in all in, and she's doing a lot and going to a lot of other functions and learning about other issues. So it just takes one thing. Remember, and I think I've said this before, Tom DeLay, who was the Speaker of the House for back in the 90s, I think, or early 2000s maybe, he said the reason that he ran for office was because he was an exterminator and he did not like the rules that the EPA had imposed that kept him from being able to practice his business the way he wanted to. Now, we might not agree with that, because I hope those of us around the table here want toxic things out of our environment. But it was that one issue that got him involved. So if you approach people, what's the one thing that's going to make you perk up and pay a little more attention?
But one thing about getting people out to vote is a lot of the people who are living hand-to-mouth, their company may actually allow them to take an hour or two or shift the schedule
right,
so they don't come into work, but then they lose that hour to pay. And that could be the difference between making the rent that month or
people
something.
People stood in line for 4 hours. North of the river, somebody I worked with, that cathedral up north, and the news media was there with the helicopters. They were in line for 4 hours to vote. And I don't know about you. I live in Kansas, and thank goodness we have advanced voting. I didn't have 4 hours in that day to vote. How many people have that kind of time when they have to pick up their children and go to soccer and all these other things? We need to make voting access more universal.
It's done on an uneven level, because at a lot of places you can get in there and you could have a 10-minute wait.
Mm-hmm.
And at other places, which are frequently areas where less well-off people are living, or possibly even areas mm-hmm. where people of color live more predominantly, then you have the four-hour wait.
That issue too,
and
right.
it's like it's being deliberately done to disenfranchise people, but trying to prove that is very hard to do.
I just thought that was so sad about people. Because that was a nice upper-middle-class suburban neighborhood, from what I could tell from what the helicopter showed. This wasn't, some neighborhood nobody cared about. But a four-hour line, that's just incredible.
I believe in some countries, maybe Spain included, I'm not sure, England, that they have weekend voting.
Mm-hmm,
and
they do.
Full days or a week
long? I don't remember it in England when I was growing up. I don't know if they changed it since I left, but they didn't have it then.
Yeah.
I know in Kansas we have advance voting, mm-hmm. and you could vote by mail in Kansas.
Yeah, it's like a 3-week window. It's
yes.
nice.
But in Missouri, you have to apply in advance for that if you know you're going to be away on the day of the election,
right.
and have some form of proof. Whereas if you get sent off by your company on business travel at the last minute,
you're
just doomed. Yeah. I actually at one point accidentally ended up being registered to vote in two places because my mother's an idiot.
Uh-oh.
I was away at university and we all got delivered our forms to sign to say where we were resident, and you had to fill it in for anyone who was resident there on that day that the registration had to be done on. And so I was away at university, I was there, and so I filled it out saying I was there. My mother just assumed that I lived at home even if I wasn't there, and she registered me on her form too. And
well, that's confusing here in the United States too.
Yeah.
As long as you only voted once.
Yes, I only voted once. And one reason I've registered to vote, thinking that burning issue that gets people to vote. All the students' unions in the UK try and get the students to register to vote in the university town, so they have some pull with the local council for any benefits or for getting permits for things, because they can say, well, we've got X thousand unhappy students that won't vote for you if you don't let us do our Rag Week fundraising or whatever. Well, that area, they vote every 10 years for whether or not to allow Sunday drinking, so whether the pubs and the liquor stores would have to shut on Sunday. And so all of the students sign up to make sure they don't end up dry.
One day a week.
Okay, now we have a call from Rosemary from Midtown. Hello, Rosemary.
Hi. Hi. I just want to make a couple of comments. First of all, Hillary, you should have won. Okay, keep running. We need young people like you. I'm too old to run. I have too much of a history. But I watched these ads that your opponent ran, and I'm like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out they were just horrible. And I know the mainstream media is out to make money, but to put on ads that were so deceitful and so vile and so deplorable just absolutely infuriated me. I'm not in Hillary's district, so I could not vote for her. I'm in Midtown. But it just, you know, the mainstream media needs to be held accountable for what ads they run. And I'm sorry, I know they need to make money and pay their staff and all of that good stuff, but those ads were deplorable, and I'm being very kind about that. They were horrible. They were so misrepresentative. They were nothing but fear-mongering. And we need people, we need young women, progressive women, out there running. And I hope you're not discouraged, Hillary, because I really want to see you run again.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your support. One of the ironic things was that one of those ads in particular did get called out for the false claims that it was making. There was an ad that said that I had refused to call for Senator Chappelle Nadal to be censured after she had made some really inappropriate statements on social media, and I had said that I thought that she should step down. And so they made ads about this, and one of the local news stations did call it out. They did a story about it. The ironic thing was, as soon as that story finished running, the ad came on the air again. And so the media did some, but...
This is why all of us need to call out the mainstream media for this. They don't need to do that. I mean, I'm sorry, I know they need to make money, just like all of us do. But deceit and lies have no place in our political process.
Or at all in adverts. And there's a law in the UK for adverts that you cannot have misleading and false claims in the adverts. So you can't say that this face powder is going to make you 20 years old again and the most beautiful person on the planet if it's not going to do that. And that has to extend to any adverts run on the air. So you can't say so-and-so candidate did something they didn't do. You can say that they would be bad for the people because that's a matter of opinion. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't actually bald-faced lie about it.
But, you know, at the end of the day, what I think it's really going to take is people on both sides being just as engaged in the process, and grassroots people, regular people, donating to candidates that they support. Because what it's going to take is to be able to get your own message out. Because some of the ads they ran just were things like, her name is Hillary. It's like, yes, and, but I didn't have the funds to push back against.
That was a big issue, and I'm like,
Did you also write emails?
No, there are a lot of and this is nothing derogatory about the name, but, you know, there are more than two people named Hillary.
I mean, I've personally met at least three. It's crazy.
Yeah. But anyway, I just wanted to call my support for Hillary and for every woman. And let's hold the mainstream media accountable for putting on ads that are basically lies.
That's a good point.
Yes.
I just watched a 2020 last night about the young woman whose last name is Markle, but I cannot for the life
Meghan.
Of me. Meghan Markle.
Oh,
when
Larry,
she was 13
Prince
years
Harry.
Old, I think she wrote a letter about how women were busy cleaning these pots and pans, and she wrote to, and they changed it to, people are worrying about cleaning these pots and pans. Did you see that, Rosemary?
Yeah. I did not see it, but...
Yeah, she did that, as a 13-year-old, if not younger. And I myself had an experience with Canon copiers 20 years ago, and I got a phone call at 7 p.m. one night from the CEO of Canon copiers apologizing for making older women look like idiots in their ad. And they pulled the ad.
Wow.
He called me at home, and I got a follow-up letter, which I still have. So don't think one person can't make a difference. One person
can.
Women
have been demonized enough.
Exactly.
We've been blamed for all kinds of things. And, you know, we are the majority, and we need to get out there, and we need people like Hillary Shields to run for office. And I would encourage her to do that again.
Oh, you're breaking up, or there's some interference, Rosemary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, Rosemary.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
I know that the Lego company keeps getting called on lack of representation for interesting careers for women, because if they do a scientist set, it's always a guy. And they've apologized and started issuing ones. And all you have to do is change out, like, the hairpiece or something. But... recently, I saw an advert for a new one, and it was astronauts, and the little Lego man was inside an astronaut outfit, so he got the shiny helmet with the little plastic and stuff, so you could still see his face through it. And I say his face because it was a guy, because it was one with the mustache on. And it's like, don't they ever learn? They could have just had no mustache, and then a girl could have assumed it was a girl, and a boy could have assumed it was a boy, and it would have been fine for everyone then.
I've seen a lot of change just in the last 4 or 5 years. My husband and I were just talking the other night. There was a commercial on TV, and he looked at me and paused the TV, and he goes, look, it's a black family. I mean, I can't remember what the product was, but there was a time not that long ago where all of the people in advertisements were your average white family, you know, two kids, boy and girl, or even on TV shows, and that's not the case anymore. I think we're making some progress.
We are, and also people tend to advertise to the market they want to sell to, and given the history of repression in America, persons of color have always had less money on average than white people. So that was probably another reason why they were aiming their demographics.
Well, and I think as our society becomes more diverse, it's reflected in whether we like it or not, advertising is part of our culture. And we're going to see the reflection there.
Representation is important.
Especially with women. Let's go back to what we talked about, what was it, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, about the election and the huge numbers of young women like Hillary Shields, who ran for office this most recent election. And I think we're going to see a big change in that.
Oh, there was, a political commercial out of Wisconsin. I think we talked about it, Fiona. How did they phrase that? Or was that Rosemary I was talking with? You can count on me as a woman. You won't have to look at my private parts, or something like that. And that private parts, I'm substituting for another word. Did you guys see that?
No, I didn't.
It's a real commercial. She has said, vote. Did you see it, Hillary?
I think she's running in Michigan for something.
Oh, Michigan.
And I only saw a real short clip.
I heard about it.
Yeah.
I heard about it. I haven't seen it yet, though. Yeah, times are changing, you know. So I feel really hopeful about that. I feel very hopeful about next year's election. How do you feel about that, Hillary?
I feel really good about it. I think I have seen a level of civic engagement that I'd never seen before. You know, I've always kind of followed the news, followed politics, but even I really hadn't been that involved. You know, I knocked doors for Barack Obama in 2008, mm-hmm. But since then, I hadn't done much. And I've seen a lot of people like me in the last year who've gotten really involved, who have started working on campaigns or visiting their senators,
right,
different things. And I think those people running for office, voting, being active is really going to make a big difference. So I'm really hopeful.
We haven't got much time. I do want to say that Ann and I attended an event at the DoubleTree Hotel the other night where the media reported that there were about 50 protesters. And
it was the Kris Kobach fundraiser featuring Donald Jr.
Yeah, but would you say there were 50 protesters?
No, there was more like 150 to 200.
That's exactly what I thought you would say.
Now, we did count. We do have an exact number for the president supporters who were across the street from us. There were 11.
11, yes. And I want to make a quick announcement about the Holly, Holly, Holly Day sales, which is in its 38th year. It's sponsored by the 501c3 Gaia Goddess Gathering. They're raising money for needy families for the holidays. And it's all women's crafts. And that's at 5100 Ararat Drive at the Ararat Shrine. And everybody probably knows where that is. But anyway, it's on the east side of the city. And then also we would like to announce...
What day?
Oh, that's today until about probably 5 or 6 o'clock. And then tomorrow starts at 11 till 5.
Okay.
So it's a little late for today. Thank you for asking me that. And we want to start remembering to give out the National Domestic Violence Hotline with all of the talk about domestic violence and sexual assault. That's 800-799-SAFE. 800-799-SAFE. Or NCD...
AV.
AV.
NCD... I'm sorry. Start again. NCADV.org.
Thank you.
And we'd also like to thank very much Hilary Shields for joining us today.
You. Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And thanks for everything you've done and for the ways you're going to make us proud in the future. I want to thank you for that, too.
And I'd like to thank Una for running the board and not dropping any of the phone calls. And
that was good.
Yes. And Sharon. And Anne for co-hosting with me today. And I'm Fiona Nowling, and you've been listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.